My personality was to blame.
What kind of call is that?
I was not afraid to say what was on my mind.
Boomer Esiason.
Esiason, wide open is Brooks. Boomer just threw that football up like it was on a hanger.
Host of Boomer and Geo, mornings on WFAN.
Why don't you just announce it on WFAN?
1988 NFL MVP.
The Cincinnati Bengals AFC champion.
NFL All-Pro and four-time Pro Bowler.
Esiason, the talk of Cincinnati.
Our very own Monday afternoon quarterback.
Sphincter tightening. I couldn't have said it any better, actually. It's a pretty good way of describing it.
Boomer Esiason with Danny Parkins on 670 The Score.
Thank you for hanging out on the Danny Parkins Show. We will have Olin Krutz hosting the 4 and 5 o'clock hour. We'll get a Bears report after Matt Nagy's press conference from Mark Grody coming up in 40 minutes, but it's the Monday after a Bears game, so it's time to go out to the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park, as we're joined by our Monday afternoon quarterback, Boomer Esiason, on the Score. What's up, Boomer?
Hey, Danny, how are you, man? 5-0 in the conference, man, first place. Who would have thunk it?
It's so wild, man. This is how I started the show. I said, if you're 5-1 and 5-0 in the conference with a championship caliber defense, we should be talking about championships and winning the Super Bowl. But we have eyes, and so like they've had a double digit deficit in 3 of their 5 wins. They couldn't run the ball against the second worst rush defense in the league, and it felt like you were watching that game while getting a root canal when the Bears were on offense for a huge part of the time. How am I supposed to balance what the record is versus what the eye test is?
Well, you know, you could be a Jet fan, you could be a Viking fan, you could be a Texan fan. Things could be a hell of a lot worse, I can tell you that.
Yep.
So you got to take it. You got to take it as they come. You know, last year was a struggle, and this year it's been the opposite. They've gotten a lot of breaks. Nick Foles has kind of stabilized the offense. The offense still isn't good enough. I mean, you're not going to win games if you're only averaging about, you know, 20, 21 points a game. You got to start scoring more, and there is potential for them to score more. There is definitely players there to make it happen. Big plays need to come now. Nick has really only practiced with this team for 2 weeks. You know, he's a very streaky player. You know, in a lot of ways, I was very similar in terms of streakiness. You know, I'd go on a 3-game run where we'd be unstoppable, and then all of a sudden 4 and 5 games into that, I'd also, you know, struggle and only throw for 150 yards in a game for whatever reason. So here's the good news. The good news is that they are 5-1. The good news is that they are in first place, and the really good news is that they're 5-0 in the conference. And they've beaten Tampa and Carolina back-to-back. Two good teams. I mean, they're good teams. Let's face it. Tampa may even be one of the better teams when it's all over said and done with. This week come the Rams. If you can beat the Rams on Monday night, now all of a sudden you're 6-0 in the conference and things are really looking up. And yesterday, you know, Green Bay stubbed its toe. The Vikings are on the way down. Kirk Cousins is a mess in the meat of the game. So there is opportunity here. Detroit, even though they won yesterday, I still am not sold on them at all. So, I mean, the Bears in a great spot. Their defense is playing great. They're getting turnovers. Khalil Mack looks healthy to me. And with Robert Quinn and Khalil Mack, you have two legit pass rushers. So that's one of the most important ingredients that a team can have, because you could see the type of pressure that teams like Pittsburgh and Baltimore and now Chicago – and even Tampa, for that matter, are putting on opposing quarterbacks, and those quarterbacks are making mistakes, and those teams are winning. You know, Ben and Tom Brady did not have to play great yesterday, and both of them won because their counterparts, Aaron Rodgers and Baker Mayfield, had awful games. And I can say the same about Nick Foles and Teddy Bridgewater yesterday.
So how much better is reasonable, Boomer, to expect the offense to get better over the course of the season? What's possible, given what we know about this Bears team with their personnel?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be the Kansas City Chiefs anytime soon. I just want to see what you want to do is you want to create a trust factor between your quarterback and your wide receivers and tight ends, and you want to be able to, you know, let your players go up and make plays. So sometimes I watch young quarterbacks, they drop back the pass, and they're afraid to let it go. Now, this should not be Nick Foles. And this is why Nick is really streaky at times, because he will throw some, absolutely ugly, wobbly passes. and he has like a reliever's mentality. And the next play, he'll throw a bomb and hit like Allen Robinson right in the arms. And, you know, this is who he is as a player. It's one of the reasons why I think he really hasn't stuck as a starter since he was with Chip Kelly in Philadelphia, because it just drives coaches crazy that, you know, he can be inaccurate at times. But as you saw in the postgame presser yesterday, he's got this, I don't know how to describe his spirit. He's got a spirit about him that is somewhat infectious. And when you're winning and you're around a guy like that, it's exactly what the Bears need. You know, he's the opposite of Mitch. He brings energy. And you know, in this season, Danny, without fans, you know, these teams have got to manufacture a lot of their own energy on the sidelines. And when I watch the losing teams, the ones that have been habitually losing over the last 6 or 7 weeks, you could see it. Their sidelines are dead. And then you watch some of these other teams that, like the Pittsburgh Steelers, for instance, or the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, they are flying around. They're high-fiving each other. They're pumping each other up. And I kind of get a sense that's what Nick is doing for the Bears, but I also see it coming from the Bears' defense, and mainly because they are healthy rushing the passer, which is really one of the most important ingredients that a team can have in the NFL.
Yeah, they seem to be one of the few teams when I watch around the league that they're getting fairly consistent pressure just by rushing four. When they rush Quinn, Mack, Nichols, and Akeem Hicks, I don't see many other teams get into the quarterback just rushing four, boom.
And that's why you're paying Khalil Mack. That's why you trade for him. You know, he's supposed to make everybody better, and he's supposed to be able to, you know, do a lot of this on his own. And he really is. I mean, that's Aaron Donald for the Rams. You could say it's TJ Watt for the Steelers, Bud Dupree for the Steelers. Yeah. You know, that's Matthew Judon for the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, there's a number of guys that are around the league that you have to account for when you're playing them. So the first thing that an offensive coordinator is going to do when he's sitting down and he's preparing for the Bears defense, okay, where are they putting Khalil Mack? You know, what are his rush techniques? You know, if I'm a tackle and I got to block him, I got to look at all of his different, you know, tricks of the trade, if you will. I remember, you know, only back in the day, whether it be Lawrence Taylor or whether it be Reggie White or Bruce Smith, I mean, you had to know where they were, and they never were at the same place, you know, and you always had to make sure that you had to adjust your pass protection just to make sure that you had those guys covered. And other players should benefit from that. To me, you know, the guy that goes unnoticed, I don't think he goes unnoticed for Bear fans, but Akeem Hicks is the guy that, to me, is a guy that you have to double team, because if you don't, he's just going to absolutely blow up the running game of the other team. So I don't know, a lot of good things for the Bears defense. I really can't say much bad about it. I would hate to play against it. It's very difficult. And like you said, if you can rush four and you can get pressure, then all of a sudden that creates a whole different dynamic for the back end of your defense. And what you saw yesterday were turnovers, tip balls, receivers being hit, because it gets very crowded. Like, the difference between, like, I think the way that the Bears are playing defense and, let's say, the Baltimore Ravens. The Baltimore Ravens got tore up by Patrick Mahomes because Patrick Mahomes is almost invincible versus the blitz. And Wink Martindale, their defensive coordinator, can't help himself. He always is blitzing. So they just got tore up by Kansas City. But when they are on their game, they are basically going to obliterate opposing teams' offenses because quarterbacks can't handle that. The Bears, I don't sense, feel like they need to do that. And that's why their secondary gets as many accolades as it does and gets the turnovers now.
We're talking to Boomer Esiason here on The Score. The Panthers coming into that game were 31st in the NFL in rushing yards allowed. They were getting 5.3 yards a carry against them. Remove the Nick Foles runs from the game because they weren't called by design. And they had the Bears had 20 handoffs for 59 rushing yards. It was, like, shockingly incompetent, even by Bears fans with low standards or expectations. How bad is the Bears' offensive line, Boom?
It's rough. There's no question about that. There's room for improvement. There's always a silver lining to every discussion that we're going to have, Danny. And I'd much rather have these discussions this year than the ones that we had last year. Let me just go on record by saying that.
Yeah, me too. This is much more pleasant. I agree.
Yes, it is. But there's always a negative tinge for some reason. There's good reason with the Bears offense. But I want to give it a couple more weeks. I want to see Nick Foles practice a little bit more. I want to see him get a little bit more comfortable with his receivers down the field. I want to see Matt Nagy call some more play action passes. You know, don't make it difficult on the offensive line. Help them out. You know, the 6 and 7 man protections are not against the law in the NFL. And I just want to see a little bit more confidence in the passing game. And once you start seeing a little bit more confidence in the passing game, then maybe you'll see less 8 man fronts. You'll see less man-to-man coverage on the outside. And I think everybody wants to stop the run in the league. That's the most important thing, especially when you are a poor run defense like Carolina is. So their main focus was to put the game on the arm of Nick Foles. But what they forgot is they forgot to tell their quarterback, stop throwing the ball away to the other team, because ultimately that's how the Bears win. They were outgained and they were outpossessed. And normally you don't win games unless the other team's turning the ball over. And that was really the key statistic yesterday.
So, Boom, I put out this poll question. It has over 5,100 votes, and it's fairly
You're
amazing.
Popular.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was a good question. I got to be honest with you.
Okay.
It was very simple. Is Matt Nagy a good head coach? Yes or no? But I was like, basically, if you want him fired or think he will be within 3 years,
fired.
I know. Here's what I know. Here, listen, I love Matt Nagy. I'm driving the fan bus for this guy. But I think most Bears fans think he's a great head coach and a completely incompetent, has no idea what he's doing, play caller. And I think that's crazy. But what do you make of a head coach who's the play caller, and how do you differentiate those two things?
Well, you know, Andy Reid's a play caller. You know, Matt LaFleur's a play caller. I can go down a list here. I mean, there's a bunch of head coaches that call plays, either on defense or on offense. You know, guys like Belichick and John Harbaugh, you know, are guys that are kind of like, you know, overseeing everything. Harbaugh is more of a special teams guy. Belichick's more of a defensive guy. But, you know, I mean, that's why he was hired. He was hired because he came off of Andy Reid's staff. He came off of a very good offensive staff who, with Alex Smith, could function. And obviously, you know, just basically has blown the league away with Patrick Mahomes. You know, he's got Nick Foles and he's got Mitch Trubisky. He doesn't have a top 10 quarterback. So, you know, he also is trying to play to their strengths, but he's also trying to play to his team's strengths. And his team's strengths right now, believe it or not, are special teams and defense. So that's how you end up calling a game. And every game takes a life unto itself, and you have to adapt to the way that the game is unfolding, how your players are playing. And, you know, I'm telling you, he benched Mitch Trubisky in the middle of a game and saved the season, as far as I'm concerned, by putting Nick Foles in and then ultimately making the decision that it was going to be Nick's season and that it's going to be Nick's team. Now, that takes a lot of guts. You know, you're basically telling your GM, you screwed up with the draft pick. You know, you traded up to get this guy, and he's not the guy. He's not our guy. And that takes a lot of guts for the head coach to do that and to recognize his own offense is being stunted because of the players who are playing the most important position. So I don't want to kill a guy because, you know, the play calling doesn't seem great, but you also have to recognize what he's working with. If you're working with, you know, I don't know, Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, the game's going to be totally different from a play call standpoint, as opposed to be, you know, calling plays for Nick or Mitch. They're just not top 10 guys. So that's why I'm telling you their offense is stunted. It's not just that they don't have great players, because I do think they do have some playmaking wide receivers. There's no question about it. We've seen it. I just think that the quarterbacks are very, very limited, and that's he's calling games to play to the defense and try to, you know, trying to run the ball, but they can't even do that. So 5-1, 5-0 in the conference, I'm taking it right now, and hopefully my offense is going to get better as the season goes on here.
Listen, I'm in complete agreement with you. I just wonder if we're just hoping or if there are real reasons to believe the offense is going to get better. And the results of that poll question, by the way, 45% of Bears fans say no, he's not a good coach. 45%.
Yeah, I mean, that's you could say that about every coach in the league, maybe with the exception of Harbaugh, Reed, and Belichick, and maybe Pete Carroll. Maybe Pete Carroll, he falls in that kind of vein too. But
Mike Tomlin, I don't know, losing year.
Yeah, but he doesn't call plays either. He's basically the inspiration of that team. But I it's hard with these coaches. Got a hard job, man. They really do, especially under these circumstances that they're dealing with. I don't think very many of the players in the league are overly happy with all the things and all the protocols that they have to go through. And I don't even want to call them sacrifices. I'm just calling them protocols. They're basically a pain in the ass, and everybody's, you know, dealing with it the best they can. The coaches have to deal with it. The coaches got to deal with the players. I mean, it's not an easy job, and they get paid a lot of money to do it. But, you know, this is his expertise, and I think if he had a different quarterback and he had a top five quarterback, believe you me, the offense would look totally different.
I agree with you. I never thought I'd live to see a day where a Bears head coach could go 12-4 and win coach of the year, then 8-8, and then 5-1. That's his record. So his record is what is 20-12 is 25-13, and 45% of Bears fans think he sucks. It's a tough job.
Let me just tell you something. The Jets are what, 0-5 or 0-6? I guess 0-6. They've been beaten double digits, I mean, almost every game, with the exception of one where they lost by 9. Adam Gase has been just absolutely atrocious, and he also is a play caller here. So right now what you have there is you almost have like the 89 49ers compared to what the Jets look like, on offense. So I would just say that it's more – about the quarterback situation than it is anything else in Chicago. Until that quarterback plays a lot better than he has been playing over the last 2 years, they're going to be mired in mediocrity. So it's now up to Nick Foles to get in sync with everybody and have his coach trust him to give him more opportunities to make plays down the field, because their defense is really, really good, and they're going to keep them in every game.
Boomer, if you had to pick one team, who's the best team in the NFC?
Well, I would normally say the Packers. Russell Wilson's playing great, but they don't have a defense really to speak of, and he's got to do so much heavy lifting. I guess based on yesterday, if we go based just on yesterday, I would have to say Tampa Bay. And that's interesting because Chicago beat Tampa Bay. And you saw Tampa Bay, and Tom Brady forgot that it was, fourth down, for God's sake. So I feel like they are the best team in the NFC because they almost have every aspect of a team. They got fast linebackers. They got good secondary people. They got a good pass rush. They also have tremendous wide receivers, and obviously Gronk is rounding into shape now for them. So I would have to say Tampa Bay is my odds-on favorite to be the best team right now in the NFC.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. I think the Saints, with Michael Thomas coming back, are going to be great, but that's what I was also telling Bears fans.
As long as he doesn't punch out his teammates, right? As long as he doesn't punch out his teammates, he'll be fine.
That just makes it more interesting. What did you ever? what was the best teammate fight that you were ever a part of? There had to be some good ones.
Well, the worst teammate fight. The worst teammate fight I was ever a part of was in training camp, and it was a white player and a black player, and it was over racial issues. And it was, a knockdown, drag out. It was like two pit bulls going after each other. And it was frightening. It was frightening to see the hatred and to see the absolute intensity that was associated with it. And our coach, Sam Weish, decided that it was going to be a good idea for black players and white players and offensive players and defensive players to room together in training camp. And he did that. And we all got to know each other. We all got to love each other. And whatever we saw the year before was no longer ruining our football team. As a matter of fact, it was the opposite. And we went to the Super Bowl because of it. So I give the late, great Sam Weish a lot of credit for recognizing a major problem and doing something about it and making a difference in all of our lives.
Wow. Your team was like the inspiration.
Amazing. In this day and age, nothing like that would ever happen. Well, if it did happen, it would be on social media in about 5 seconds and somebody would be taking a picture of it. But this was back, when there was none of that stuff and there was nobody around. And we were the Cincinnati Bengals at Wilmington College, of all places, about halfway between Cincinnati and Columbus, Ohio, in the middle of nowhere. And this happened on the third floor of a dorm in a hallway that was about 10 feet wide. And two ginormous human beings just basically, it was like they were fighting to the death. It was so startling. And we had our other bigger guys had to get involved and get them off of each other. I had never, it was shook me to the core that year. And I'll never forget it as far as long as I live. And that's why I do recognize, and I remember saying back then, and I say today, and many players still say it, until you're in an NFL locker room, you can't truly appreciate how different we all are, but how, when we do have a common goal, how we all can come together and love each other and support each other.
That's beautiful. That's a, there's a hell of a life lesson there. And that's why everybody wants their kids to play team sports, right? Your parents.
I would think so. I think, you know, it's learning about people, you know, and it's learning that we're all different in our own way. And if we do have a common goal, that, and when we do come together and we do win, it really is amazing. And, you know, I think about Nick Foles when they beat the Patriots, and the 3 weeks prior to that, the way he played, he didn't play great leading into that Super Bowl, man, but he had a Super Bowl for the ages. And I remember how his teammates just reacted to him. And that was a remember the Titans moment. I mean, it was just amazing. You know, my college roommate happened to be his offense coordinator, Frank Reich. And I was so happy for my college roommate because he got the best out of that quarterback in the biggest moment of both of their lives. And it was just an awesome, awesome thing to watch and witness.
Boomer, you're the goods each and every week, man. We'll talk to you. Bears have the Rams next Monday night, so we'll talk to you. Get ready for that game, all right?
All right, sounds good, Danny. Have a great week, all right?
All right, thanks, buddy. That's Boomer Esiason, WFAN, the NFL Today on CBS, every Monday at 3 o'clock. That is, listen, whether you agree or disagree with his analysis of the Bears, I mean, he talked about the offensive line being bad. He said, you know, play caller can only be as good as his quarterback a lot of the time. Matt Nagy is not going to give up play calling duties. He's just not. So you can cry for it. You can call for it. We can talk about it. But it's not happening. Maybe in the future it'll happen. But it is just not happening this year. It's like when a couple years ago, when John Paxson and Gar Forman were still here, and I was doing the midday show with Spiegs, and we would talk about the Bulls, and we would talk about the head coach, and we talk about the roster, and we talk about the GM, and we talk about the president. And then eventually someone would be like, and what about ownership? And I would always say, like, it's where we should stop the conversation. Not because we can't talk about a good owner versus a bad owner or anything like that. Not because of any retribution for me. I don't care about that. It's because they're not selling the team. Like, that's not happening. So you could stop going to games, and that'll get ownership's attention and hit them in the pocketbook and all of that. But, like, you're not changing owners. That very rarely happens in sports. So, like, we should stop a degree short of when we just get into pure fantasy when we're doing this. So, like, Matt Nagy is not going to give up play calling. It will not happen. So you can wish for it to happen, but really we should talk about how does he get better at play calling, as opposed to saying that he should give it up. Because texter just texted in, like, Bill Lazor should be the play caller. Really? You have an extensive scouting report on Bill Lazor as a play caller? I don't. Please call in if you do. Like 312-644-6767. Like, if you know definitively that John DeFilippo or Bill Lazor will be better play callers for the Bears than Matt Nagy, cool. And if your argument is he just can't do both at the same time, fine, I'm here to listen to it, but I will tell you, Matt Nagy's not giving up those responsibilities anytime soon. We'll talk to Olin about that at 4, Mark Grody in 15 minutes. We got to decide on a nickname for a Chicago Bear next on The Score.
Sloth, that's his nickname. I mean, he just does what he's supposed to do, but he's doing a good job right now. You know, you like him. He's a big target. All those guys are big targets. I really like what Coach Clancy's doing with those tight ends right now. They're feeding off of Jimmy's energy, his excitement, his swag, and then Demetrius is the same way. So we'll see. You know, we like where they're at, but they're all a little bit different. So it makes it fun to be able to call plays with those guys.
Okay, that's a spectacular find by Rick Camp, because I wanted to talk about what we should nickname Demetrius Harris. And that was Matt Nagy saying that his nickname is Sloth. So that's
Sloth,
just,
that's his nickname.
That's incredible. So I shared on social media, schemed wide open, perfect throw, bad drop by Demetrius Harris, that can't happen. And sometimes I forget how many people on social media follow me from my 6 years in Kansas City. I just tweeted more then, and people would follow new accounts more back then earlier on in Twitter. And so I got like probably a couple, 10, 20,000 people that still follow me from Kansas City. And I mean, just the unbelievable torrent of people that were like, you must be new here, or yep, that's what happened. And I got flooded with two nicknames that have evidently Chiefs Twitter had nicknamed Demetrius Harris. One was Drop Demetrius Harris, and the other was Incompletrius Harris. I think the second one is a better insult. Incompletrius Harris. Now, Drop Demetrius, you know, the D in Demetrius and the D in Drop, it makes a little bit more sense. But I feel like Incompletrius Harris is funnier, Shep. What do you think? I think Incompletrius Harris is better.
I mean, are all of the people that came up with these nicknames, like, did Herb Lawrence spend time in Kansas City that I don't know about? Because this seems like the absolute 100% perfect Herb thing. Hey, that man's name is Incomplete BS.
Okay. All right.
Like, it just sounds like this was made for Herb. Like, this sounds like a bit that he did on his own when you were saying those names. They're too perfect. You can't go wrong to answer your question.
Okay, but can't go wrong. So your vote is for both. His name is Drop Demetrius Incompletrius Harris.
I mean, I like, yeah, perfect, yes. But the incomplete, okay. I can't even say it right, but yes.
Then don't try. Shane, Drop Demetrius or Incompletrius Harris? By the way, texters think you and I have legitimate beef.
Yeah, we definitely don't. And they don't like. It's just a funny thing, and apparently they don't like me on the mic, so I'm not going to talk anymore because I listen to them.
Well, so, since I'm the outsider, I'll expose it. And, of course, you guys actually have beef.
No, I'm very much with Shep because I hate Herb's bit, even though it's unbelievably clever. I love that bit where he changes somebody's name real cleverly. It's funny, so I'm going with Dropmetrius and Completrius Harris.
So both. Okay, yes. So our answer is we're indecisive. It's just yes. He is now, from this day forward, he is known as Dropmetrius Incompletrius Harris.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it.
Or Brick like Hands that. Bob. One of the two.
Okay. Well, don't put that out as a poll question, but Dropmetrius Incompletrius Harris and Shane and I don't know if we're friends.
I'd say we're friends. No, I'd say we're friends.
Yeah, I think we're friends, too. This hour's keyword for the Google Home giveaway is Chrome. Text Chrome to 44995 for your chance to win the new Nest Audio from Google. Get the latest sports news from 670 The Score with a little help from Google. Just say, hey, Google, play 670 The Score. Again, text Chrome to 44995 to win. Message and data rates may apply. I'm surprised. Some people said I mischaracterized the conversation about Matt Nagy to Boomer Esiason. I honestly don't think that I did. I think that there are legitimate criticisms that you can have of Matt Nagy abandoning the running game too soon, that he's a play designer and accumulator but doesn't have the best feel for play calling, that sometimes play calling get in the they distract from the head coaching duties and vice versa, and that it's a lot to take on for any one coach, and the ones who are the best at that are truly the best of the best in the profession, and he hasn't proven to be that yet. It's not that Matt Nagy is Teflon. It's just that, to me, there are so many more things in the positive than the negative column for him, and, oh yeah, by the way, the results. And, oh, yeah, by the way, they hired him to run this offense, so he's not giving up play calling anytime soon. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he hasn't had a chance to pick his quarterback because Nick Foles, I know he's his guy in the sense that it's more Nagy's guy than Pace's guy, but that's not his QB of the future. That's his QB of hopefully just this year. So since he's going to pick the next quarterback in the draft and he's got an overwhelming winning record, and the players love him, and he checks all of those leadership boxes. I think the conversation about is Matt Nagy a good head coach, I think it's laughable. Did he have a bad day yesterday? Yes, he did. But is he a bad head coach? I think that's a laughable conversation. We will talk about Olin Cruz because I know he feels slightly differently than I do. And who's more to blame for the Bears offense, Nagy or Pace, will be a big conversation when Olin joins us for the last 2 hours of the show. But Mark Grody spoke to the Bears head coach after the game yesterday and today. He joins us next on The Score.
Here's the man that you fear most in football staring you right in the face.
Mark Grody.
I call him a maniac. Stone maniac.
Covering the Bears for 670 The Score.
You had to overcome the mystique. It was almost like an odor. He exuded a kind of a presence.
Sideline reporter for Bears Radio, WBBM.
His whole damn life was football. Wasn't driving a pretty car. Wasn't going to the local bar and pounding your chest, I'm the greatest. It was the opposite.
Mark Grody.
He was Moby Dick in a goldfish bowl.
Mark Grody with Danny Parkins on 670 The Score.
Normally, we get our Bears reports with Moby Ditka at 4 o'clock, but today, Olin Kreutz is hosting on Bears Monday for the 4 and 5 o'clock hour with yours truly. Mark Grody kind enough to move up his Bears report 20 minutes. He's on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park. Hi, Mark.
Oh, yeah, like I'm going to get in the way of Olin Kreutz. I mean, come on. Will I move it up 20 minutes for Kreutz? Yeah. By the way, ask Kreutz when he comes on what he thinks about Jason Spriggs as a guard, as a solution for the Bears. Just ask him about that. We had a discussion
Jason
about it on
Spriggs
the pregame.
As
yeah,
a
put
guard.
That, write that down on your little jot down sheet right there.
It.
Yeah, get into that with him. Get into that with him a little bit and see what he says about that, because there needs to be solutions. You know what I'm saying?
yeah. How about a couple of solutions? So you heard Matt Nagy after the game. You heard Nick Foles after the game. You heard Matt Nagy today. What I've been saying, the weird place that Bears fans find themselves in, Grody, is if you didn't watch the games, you would say they're 5-1. They have 5 wins in conference. For the most part, they're healthy. They've made the correct decision at quarterback. The NFC is filled with flawed teams. The Bears can win the NFC, and if you can win the NFC, you could win the Super Bowl. But assuming most Bears fans have their sight and have eyes, they see 3 double-digit deficits in victories, terrible offense and all that. Do you trust the record or your eyes, or what do you make of the squad?
It's really tough, man. I use the word fascinating to describe this Bears team, because at some point in time, because all these games are seemingly repeats of each other, at some point in time you just have to accept it and say, okay, this is ugly every single week. The Bears offense every single week at some point in time has looked straight up bad. But at the end of the game, they're winning. And as you said, they're 5-1. They're 5-0 in the NFC. They haven't lost in the conference. They're already doing themselves favors as far as potential tiebreakers in the end. It's going to be hard for the Bears at this point to not make the playoffs. So at some point in time, you have to accept that they're going to win despite these issues. And I threw down one comp here, and you know, I threw it out on Twitter, and that was the 2001 Bears, where they were 13-3, and they had no business being 13-3, and the evidence came in the first round of the playoffs against Philadelphia when they got Hugh Douglas to death. But it was an entertaining year, and at some point in time that year, a 13-3 year with Dick Geron and the Mike Brown walk-off wins, you're like, okay, they're 13-3. Let's act accordingly. Now, last week, Danny, Matt Nagy's philosophy, or what he went into his press conferences thinking, his strategy, I should say, was to call out the offense. That was what he did. The concerted effort this week was to not call out the offense. As a matter of fact, reel that back in, get back to being encouraging about that, and instead talk about the defense and encourage the defense and praise the defense. And I want to play this cut for you. And then I want to tell you why I think it was incredibly significant what you are about to hear, because I think it's relatively unprecedented. Here's Matt Nagy on the defense and more.
You get down there, they get that first down on 4th-and-3, and then we end up holding them to a field goal. That's special. There's not a lot of teams that can do that and rebound from that. The mental fortitude that they have to be able to stick together. I mean, they were flying around. I mean, I was just talking to defensive coaches earlier this morning. There's literally like all these guys on the team. There's different spots, different positions, different times throughout the game that they're all just flying around playing fast, and they're just creating havoc. It's cool to see. I mean, it's across the board. What that's doing right now is really putting us in a great spot to be able to win these games. And we understand that. And that's why when we sit here and we talk about where we're at collectively as a team in all three phases and four phases as coaches too, is we really believe, I believe that there's something special here with these players and something special with the coaches. And even though it's not that fantasy world everybody wants on offense, it's not that. What it is it's winning.
So here's why I thought that was significant, Danny. For the first time, I thought Nagy really leaned in to what they
are. Can you speak more into the mic? You're coming in a little quiet.
How's this? Is this better?
That's much better. Much better.
Is it better? Yeah, okay. I don't know why I got to hold this phone up. You got it, man. I need to be heard. Bears. Matt Nagy, for the first time, really leaned into what they are, and that is defense, and to what they are not. And that's fancy. I thought it was incredible that he used the word, you know, this fantasy world that everybody wants them to be in. The reason why Bears fans wanted them to be in this fantasy world, Danny, is because that was what Matt Nagy came into Hallis Hall with in 2018. That he came in, he wanted the fantasy world. He wanted the Kansas City Chiefs offense. He wanted touchdowns, touchdowns, touchdowns. And while he still wants that, and this is not Matt Nagy giving up on his offense and just accepting who they are, but to some degree, this is the first time we've heard Matt Nagy offer yesterday after the game and today during his press conference, offer what their identity is, and that's defense and trying to get by on offense, even if it ain't pretty, even if it's not 6-6-6-6-6 down in the red zone every single time. It's do what you have to do to win games. And I don't know, I had not heard that version of Matt Nagy until the last couple of days, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's him being a realist, but maybe being a little resigned to, damn, if we can't kind of impose our will on this defense, then it's going to be a struggle every week. I thought the offensive line was bad. I didn't realize it was that bad, that they were able to get beat at the point of attack by that Panthers D-line in front seven. How did Matt Nagy evaluate the play of his offensive line?
Well, let's go specifically, and he'll cover it all in what I'm about to play for you. But there was a decision made during the week, and we found out about 25 minutes before the game that Rashad Coward would be the starter at left guard, obviously the position that James Daniels had to vacate because of the pectoral injury. And he apparently, from what they saw during the week and what they saw in one game, they decided that he beat out Alex Bars. So Matt Nagy explains the Rashad Coward decision and gets into the offensive line in general right here.
We put a lot of stock into what these guys have done up until now. And then again, a lot too with what our coaches feel and where they're at, and Coach Juan Castillo, where he's at. And it's all of us, you know, it's collectively what we did. And there's a couple plays here or there that Rashad had that he probably wants back. But he also, I thought there's a lot of other plays where all things considered, he did a pretty good job. We just got to keep plugging away. Hey, they got to just over and over and over, keep trusting their fundamentals, trusting what Juan's teaching them, and then continue for all of us to work together and try to create solutions to the problems that we have on offense and do everything we can to get that fixed.
Yeah, and with the key part there, Danny, being get that fixed, meaning the offensive line is broken. They kept Nick Foles clean, but it's obvious. And look, everybody wants to know about the run game. We all do. We've been talking about this since Matt Nagy got here. It's always been a question. He doesn't feel like he has the guys on the offensive line to get a third and two, to get a third and three, as being what they needed at the end of the game with 5:24 to go, with a minute 40 to go. You don't trust that offensive line. And at this point, I think there's some legitimacy to that, that it's a personnel issue right now with the Bears offensive line.
I think so too. And by the way, that means it was a personnel issue when Mitch Trubisky was there. And it doesn't mean that they made the wrong decision. I think it's very clear that they made the right decision at quarterback, and people are like, the numbers are very similar between Foles and Trubisky. I'm like, yeah, but Mitch has played with these guys for a couple of years. Foles has played with them for a couple of weeks, and Foles is doing it against better defenses than Mitch was. I don't think it's particularly close. I don't think it's going to be particularly close when the season is done.
Well, and I think it was the Colts game. Was that the 25-yard rushing game? I think it was. And after that game, I had a one-on-one with Jermaine Ifedi, and he didn't give it up exactly what was going on, but he told me right then and there, he said, okay, the defensive line was doing something to us that hadn't been done before, And now, guess what? This is what Effetti said. Guess what? It's a copycat league. Now all these other defenses are going to start doing the same thing. And we've seen it now 3 weeks in a row where the Bears have not been able to get a run game going. And I couldn't, and maybe Olin Krutz will be able to tell you what it is that teams are doing to the Bears offensive line to get them a step back further, because that's what's going down. But something has happened that other teams have figured out that wasn't there in the first two, three games of the season, where the offensive line actually looked pretty good and yeah. David Montgomery actually looked pretty good. And now none of it's working because something has been figured out.
Bears nuggets, what do you got for us?
All right, man, I got one big fat nugget for you today, Danny, and it's bonus sound. So I did... See, now I can see your expressions. I am a dork.
This is great. Twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. See Grody's quarantine hair, by the way. What does it look like when you've given up? Mark Grody.
I like to think of it as, let's just see what happens if I let this keep going. When my hair grows long, it does bad things. It's not growing long, it's growing out, which is ridiculous. But anyway, my nugget for the day. As you know, Danny, and as I like to throw out there, I did 3 years worth of charter flights with the Chicago Cubs. I was treated very well, nice hotels, got to travel with the team, with the players, got to see how they all act on an airplane and all that kind of stuff. And everybody always wants to know what goes down on those charter flights. Well, Matt Nagy shared a little bit of insight as to what it was like on the Bears flight yesterday back from Carolina.
I wish y'all could have been on the plane with us flying home last night, man. We were rocking and rolling, you know? It's like we're so fired up right now. It's a great feeling, and it's pretty cool.
Mark Grody?
What player or players stand out the most on a rocking and rolling? Who's the most entertaining guy on that ride?
Oh, they all are now. They some of them get up, walk around. They have their own little conversations. And you guys are into the rocking and rolling thing, huh?
Yeah.
That's I'm sure that'll be headlines tomorrow, huh? Rocking and rolling. There'll be some picture or something, but
that's good though.
No, that's good. You're right. We like, you know, that's fine. See, that's what I think is important is this: win, lose or draw. Those are some moments that we're all together where you're able to, there's great conversations in there about off the field stuff, but then there's also the X's and O's part. Hey, you remember this play? What'd you think about this? And we're all watching, we got our film on the plane. So we're all watching it. Some guys do, some guys read books, some guys sleep. It's your own prerogative. It's really good. It's healthy. And I like it. And it just really sets the tone for going into the next week of where you're at.
Go Bears. Yeah.
Go Bears.
Yeah. Go Bears. You're fired up.
I mean, listen, they deserve to celebrate. They deserve to rock and roll and all of that. And I'll be honest. They came out of the game sounding like the fans. There's nobody out there that's texting in and being like, you're being too hard on the Bears. Because Nick Foles came out and was like, we know that was not very pretty. Matt Nagy, like, yeah, we're celebrating it, but it wasn't fantasy land or anything like that on offense. Like I saw I think it was Torrey Smith tweeted, and I think he was talking about the Ravens, but he's like, there's no better luxury in the NFL than to be winning with things to clean up. And that's what the Bears are right now. Maybe they clean it up, maybe they don't. Like I happen to think there's a fairly low ceiling right now on this offense with this line and based on what they did yesterday. But who knows, man? The NFC is flawed. So they could wake up a 12-win team and a one seed and have a legitimate shot at making a Super Bowl. Like that is still in play for the Bears.
Yeah, and this is a crucial stretch right now as far as the schedule is concerned. And Matt Nagy, by the way, used the word warts to describe what has to be cleaned up with the Bears offense still. So it's not like they've given up, but they've got Monday Night Football at the Rams, home against the New Orleans Saints, and then at Tennessee. So, and then for whatever it's worth, then home against Minnesota on Monday Night Football. So the next four games, man, I mean, this could truly tell you who the Bears are. And actually, I would have included that in the Carolina game, a road game with a Carolina team that had won three straight games. So maybe they've already could check one off the list here. They can get through that schedule, you know, with a couple of wins, man, they are in really good shape. And none of us really knows why, Danny.
Bears?
Bears. Yeah.
Bears,
I think
Bears.
I think now more than ever, Danny. I think now more than ever because they're 5-1 and nobody knows how to handle it. None of us knows what to say. Are we allowed to be happy? Are we not? Are we bad because we're being critical? So Bears. Yeah.
Bears. Well, you know who knows? Olin Krutz knows something about being on a good Bears team that's totally carried by its defense. He's got a lot of experience with that type of unique Chicago sports situation. So, Grody, thank you for being flexible. We'll talk to you next week around the Bears and Rams. We'll bring in Olin Krutz for the next 2 hours on a Bears Monday on The Score.